And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, all you sports fans. Today is Wednesday, May 17th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. I'm here with Kevin. Listen to us any way you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Give us a good rating. We can use some stars at the end of those. Follow us on Facebook. Send us posts, thoughts, questions. Talk to us. We got a lot going on. The Knicks season is done. It was a very good year. We're going to touch on that. NBA and NHL are down to four. Devils are gone. Yankees and Mets are trying to get it going in the right directions. They're battling injuries. They're battling a lot of stuff. The NFL schedule is out. A lot of craziness going on with that. The Preakness is Saturday. We got more horse racing coming your way. And in golf, the PGA Championship starts tomorrow. Give us a listen as we go through the world of sports. We're going to start it off with the Knicks. Listen, it was a good season. We all think it was a good season. They exceeded expectations in a lot of people's eyes, definitely in my eyes. We'll talk to you guys about it in a sec. Don't know where they're going to go from here, how they can get to the next level with this team. We're going to touch on that. Kev, let's start it off with a little Knicks. What do you got? Okay. Kev's having a little issue with his audio. Darren, thanks. What do you think?
Kevin likes it. It was fun watching Kevin talk because he got deep for a few seconds. And there's none of us could hear him. We'll go back to you, Kev. I think you're ready to go now.
Darn mute buttons just kill me all the time. Yeah, Gino, I think you summed up the Knicks really well. You know, this is a team that preseason, you know, a lot of people had pegged at maybe the play-in games if they were had a good season, you know, 40-41 win team. They exceeded expectations. They got the fifth seed. We talked about it in the preview in the first round. Darren and I both thought they really needed to win that series to have a real successful year. And they did. You know, this was a team that they should have beaten. Then you get to Miami, and unfortunately, I think they were caught by, you know, the best player on the floor in the series was clearly Jimmy Butler. It doesn't help when Randall and RJ combined for 4-for-24 in game six there. We've said it all year, the Knicks have a good team, and they are a team. But if they want to make that next leap, they need a superstar player. And I don't think there is a superstar player on this team. Brunson is at one notch below. He'd be the 1A or 1B to a 1A superstar. But they need that one surefire go-to guy like a Jimmy Butler, who you know you can count on in a big spot in game seven, who you feel like you can, he's a guarantee for 30, 35 points. And they're just missing that one piece, I think. The rest of the team, I mean, they're deep, they're good, they're fairly young. But I think they're one piece away. Darren?
I mean, here's the thing. You said it. I mean, Randall's not a star, okay? He just isn't. He's a nice player in regular season games. He can stack on points and he'll have an occasional good playoff game. The problem with Randall is he's not someone that's going to give you that double team and pass out of it and get open looks for other players on your squad. And that's what Butler did. Even though Butler didn't score 30 every night, what Butler did was when he got the ball and the double team came, they swung it around and Duncan Robinson, for some strange reason, the Knicks figured he would be the guy I leave open. You can't do it to a dead-eye shooter. And they did that a couple of times throughout the series. Barrett, you know, I've been criticizing Barrett since we started talking NBA, all right? He's got a lot of nice parts to his game. He cannot shoot. If you're going to rely on Barrett hitting jump shots, you're not going to win. You're right. They need another guy. I like the nucleus with Hart. I think Barrett's still part of the nucleus. I think a lot of the guys are still part of the nucleus.
Yeah.
The thing about it is that they need that guy that forces that double team in the big spot that can swing it out to the open guy, and they have to be able to hit shots. There's always going to be the question about Thibodeau as well. His teams don't win at all because do they max out during the regular season? Does he get as much out of them as they can, and they don't have an extra gear because they play so hard all year? I don't know. I'm not going to make that judgment. I like Thibodeau because he makes the team competitive. So I don't have the criticisms of Tibbs that a lot of people do. But I just think that, Brunson needs a running mate.
But I don't think this – I don't think I can fault Tibbs this year on this. You know, this was – I don't think he – and I know he's been accused of this in the past. I don't think he was – extremely hard and drove this team hard all year. I thought they played for the most part to their ability. I don't feel like anybody really exceeded their ability and was pushed beyond what they should be able to do. They just had each individual player had a ceiling and they reached that ceiling, especially in the playoffs. And that's why they need something extra. And it's not Tibbs. It wasn't Tibbs' fault. I'll defend Tibbs on this one this year.
What do you guys think that this team what do we learn from this group of players, right? What do we learn? Is there somebody that needs to go from this team?
I mean, because I don't think it's not so much they have to send somebody out. They're going to need to move a piece or two if they want to bring in one of the big guys. I don't think you can pinpoint one guy. You know, it could be Randall, who seems to come up small in his big spot. It could be RJ because he doesn't shoot that well. You know, but like I said, I'm not putting the blame on these two guys. They are who they are.
Okay, so
I put a little bit of a blame on him. You can't come up 4-for-26 with 11 turnovers in game 6. I'm sorry, Brunson did everything he could, and he got absolutely zero help. The thing about it now is that Julius Randle or RJ Barrett, that's the position of upgrade. You're not upgrading your point guard. There is no – you're not getting Jokic, all right?
There's no center to upgrade.
There's no center. You're not getting Jokic, right? Well, so now you're getting the wing. I mean – what's your point, G?
So here's the thing, right? The player you're going to add is going to be a disgruntled superstar. The Knicks have a lot of picks. They have some young players. So somebody, and maybe it's multiple players, are going to go if it happens. And I'm not saying it's going to happen. But, you know, I'll give you the names that are thrown out there right now. And again, I'm not saying they're good fits or bad fits. I'm just telling you names that are being thrown out there. And the first one happened as soon as the Sixers are out, which is what if Embiid says he wants out, right? So if Embiid says he wants out, the Knicks are probably going to be one of the teams that's going to be involved in, do we try to make a play for him? Whether it's good or bad.
They're not trading within the division, G. There's no way. There's no way Embiid stays in the division. Philly is not going to do it.
I'm not so sure.
Philly is that close.
You could have said
Harden
that.
Harden could walk quicker than Embiid, in my opinion.
Okay, wait. But you guys could have said the same thing to me a year and a half ago about James Harden not going to Philly, and he does. So I get your point, but I'm just throwing some of these superstars out there. The other ones were Carl Anthony Towns. The other one was that they threw around, which is what if Luka is unhappy? Again, I'm not telling you they're going to go because I don't know how Dallas figures out a way to get rid of Luka at this point, but I'm just telling you. So if one of those three that I just named is coming here, multiple players are going to go there along with picks, along with swaps, blah, 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 blah. But that's the type of player that they're going to bring in. And in some ways it's good, in some ways it's bad, because if they do that, you're going to break up a good portion of the nucleus of this team to bring this guy in here. And the example is Embiid. If it's Embiid, right? So now Embiid is now your center. So now you still have problems maybe with a shooter on the outside. Not that a shooter won't come here then, but you're still going to have these issues. So any thoughts on any of this, guys?
Well, I mean, just to say, I think you'd have a hard time getting him beat. At the time when the trade was made, Ben Simmons wasn't the disaster that he has become, okay? So the Nets were under the impression that they were getting someone else to fill in the third part of the big three at a different scenario, so to speak. He wasn't as good as Harden, and I'm not saying
I'm
he
not
was.
Sure I agree with that.
Well, you thought I'm that Ben sure Simmons was a dog at that point? I don't think he was. Simmons was playing in the playoffs.
He didn't play in a year and a half. He didn't want to be on the court. He didn't want to play. This Rivers basically told him, "You're not playing for us."
So it was off of a bad playoff the year before. But here's the thing. I mean, watched Harden in this playoff run. Did he ever play like that at all as a net? This is the best I've seen him play in about 5 years.
Absolutely not.
I mean, you bring in a Harden. If it's an Embiid, right, and you're going to trade a bunch of guys, you're going to have to trade a bunch of assets. You're going to have to trade Mitchell Robinson. You're going to have to trade Randall. You're going to have to trade Barrett. And you're going to have to trade number ones. And you're going to have to, you know, I mean, you're looking at all that stuff going off. You know, it would be intriguing. I just would be stunned if Philly would let the best player in the division go.
Again,
Harden's also in his 30s and Embiid's in his 20s coming off an MVP season. It's not the same move, Jay.
No, listen, I'm not saying it's Embiid. I just mentioned players that were thrown out this year.
Because Cat plays the four. Now, all of a sudden, Randall goes, Barrett goes, a couple of number ones go, and he replaces Randall. And that's an easier, seamless fit. He's a Jersey guy. He's from the local area. Makes a lot more sense to me.
If
you want to say Doncic, you do whatever the hell you can get to get Luka Doncic on this team.
Well, listen,
it's not even a question.
I'm just throwing out some names, right? But the reason I'm throwing out these names is that the only way for them to really get to the next level is to acquire a superstar of that caliber. And to do that, you're going to break up what you have. Because you're not bringing in a rookie that's going to give you production that one of those guys is going to. And unless you're changing some of the pieces on this team, you're really not going to get much better than where you are. Maybe you get a couple of players, you get a couple of shooters that they shoot the ball a little bit better, but theoretically you're not getting that much better at that point. But listen, it was a really good year. It was a really good year.
Yeah, they're going to have to do something to clean it all up, so to speak, and to get that extra body in here to get to that next step. They just don't have it at this point.
Okay, we're down to four teams in the NBA. Denver beat the Lakers last night. They're up 1-0. The other series is going on right now. Boston's up at the half over Miami. The other thing that came out was yesterday, the NBA draft order was chosen. The Spurs wound up with the number one pick. So basically, they own the rights basically to the Wembanyama sweepstakes, the 19-year-old, the 7'5 19-year-old from France, who a lot of people are calling a generational talent. Kind of crazy the way that happens, right? Duncan, and then after Robinson, then Duncan, and now Wembanyama.
Yeah, now we have Pop gets another chance to ruin another superstar. We get to watch him 65 times a year because everybody needs a freaking nap.
Kev, you want to touch on anything on the draft order or the four teams remaining in the playoffs?
I think on the draft order, it was just interesting that I know the Knicks were rooting for one of those guys at the tail end there from 11 to 14 to jump up into the top four. Dallas keeps their 10th pick. It would have gone to the Knicks if it fell outside the top 10. That's the only local interest we had in the draft lottery. As far as the four remaining teams, we've got the Celtics Heat. I think this is where the Celtics take care of the Heat. I think the Heat, they've had a great ride. They knocked off Milwaukee. Of course, they beat the Knicks. But I think Boston is probably the best team that they'll face so far in the Eastern Conference. I see Boston winning this series pretty easily. I see this going maybe even as soon as 5 games. Out West, I've always hated the Lakers. I made that on the Facebook post. I'm rooting against the Lakers. So maybe this impacts my decision. But I think the Nuggets, the way they played, the way they took care of, yes, a little bit compromised Suns without Chris Paul. But I think watching the way Jokic is playing, my goodness. I mean, it seems like he's guaranteed a 30-point triple-double every night. I mean, he's had, what, 3 of them in a row now, I think?
He's pretty incredible right now.
He's playing unbelievable right now. And I'll be rooting for Denver to win this series.
I mean, Jokic last night was 34 points, 21 rebounds, 14 assists, which is just insane to talk about.
Yeah.
He had the double double with seven assists at the half. I'm just saying. I mean, he was already in the 20s. The thing was that the Lakers did everything they could last night. Davis had 40 points. LeBron wasn't awful. He didn't hit any threes, but he shot the ball well for the most part. They got good performance from Reeves. They didn't get much from the guards, but L.A. played about as well as they could, and Denver took them. I have Denver winning that series in five, in my opinion. I think that it is better, but I've said that before. And then the second one is, Celtics should have been much better than the Hawks. That took six. Celtics should have been much better than the Sixers. That took seven, and they had to come back from down 3-2. To me, Miami's going to give them fits. I think Miami's going to bother them a little bit. I think they play good defense, and I think Spoelstra's a good coach. I think the series is going to go longer than Kev. I think that series is going to go six or seven. I'll say it goes seven, and I'll take Boston to win it. But I think that Miami's going to give them a lot of trouble.
Just for the record, I have Denver in five. I have Boston in six. So that's where I stand at the moment.
The only other thing on the NBA I wanted to touch on real quick was the three fired coaches this year so far. So Doc Rivers, Monty Williams and Mike Budenholzer are the three winningest coaches in the NBA over the last three seasons. All of them without a job right now. Just basically tells you how much the inmates run the asylum. And speaking of the inmates, we have Ja Morant as well, who's going to be suspended for a very long time for brandishing a weapon again. And you just hate to see it because of the talent that the guy has and how much fun he is to watch on the court. But to talk about the coaches real quick, it's hard. I mean, basically, from what you hear, Harden did not like Doc. Doc hasn't won anything. So, I mean, it's not like you could sit there and say, well, Doc's like this championship coach. But, they didn't seem to get along. Budenholzer, did a nice job in Milwaukee, won a title a couple of years back. They had no problem blowing him out. And I thought Monty Williams did a real good job. He's the winningest coach over the last three seasons with the Suns. And I thought that, I know that they got Durant, but they didn't really give it a lot of time to mesh. I don't know if Durant had anything to do with it or Booker, or if it was just that they decided that they're going to find another coach that's going to have that kind of winning percentage over the next 3 years. But just surprising how quickly coaches get fired in the NBA when new players come over and they sit there for about 5 minutes and they're able to control the team and the league to an extent. Just my take, guys. I don't know what you guys think on that.
Yeah, I thought Budenholzer deserved more time. Being that he won a championship fairly recently, I thought Monty deserved a chance to see what he could do with a full season with the Durant-led Suns. Doc Rivers, I can see making a change. When you look at his coaching record, he's got 11 losses in a Game 7.
Yep.
Far more than any other coach. He's got a losing record in series clinching games. I mean, he's a guy that gets a team to a certain level, and for some reason, the team just does not respond, and they can't close the door out. They can't close the series out. And, another one of these that I don't know if a part of it is that he's coached good teams in his career and therefore makes his regular season record look good. But come playoff time, he's not a playoff winning coach. He's never been, and he's proven to be.
I don't mind the change of the coach in Philly with Doc being out. I do mind that it's basically coming down to Harden speaking up that gets him, that basically takes him out. Basically,
if it was all Harden, yeah, that's terrible.
This is the NBA now, though.
Yeah,
this is the NBA. The superstar gets to control the team a little bit more. And listen, I get it. There's a lot less players on a team. It's not like managing a 26, man baseball team. Hockey players don't seem to ever have any power. They're from small towns in Canada and Russia and Northern Europe, and they're excited to be there so they don't complain much in football. They're just trying to make the squad, but with the roster being as large as it is. So it's a little different basketball. It was 12. Now it goes up to like 15 guys on the roster. And I guess they just have that much more control. I don't know. I just, you know, I don't have a team. I guess the only team I'll actually remotely root for out of the four teams is the Nuggets, who have never made it to a final. Understand that. Denver Nuggets have never even made it to a conference an NBA final. I think the only time they made an NBA final was they lost to the Long Island Nets back in the day. But I don't think that they've ever made a final. And they've been a team that's been good sometimes, but never have gotten to the next step. So it'd be nice to see a new team get there as well. Milwaukee did it a couple of years ago, hadn't done it since Kareem. You know, it's nice to see, a couple of new teams get a chance to get up there. So, you know, the NBA, we'll see what happens. Hopefully the Nuggets win. Heat and Celtics. I'm picking the Celtics, but I'm rooting for the Heat. G, back to you.
All right, let's move. We'll move right to the NHL. Four teams left. Carolina versus Florida. Dallas versus Las Vegas. Devils got eliminated by Carolina, 4-1. In a lot of ways, they were not in that series for a good portion of it. The big thing was is that Seattle basically made Dallas go to a seventh game to get them in. Other than that, everybody else, Florida beat Toronto 4-1. Las Vegas took care of Edmonton 4-2. Darren?
That Toronto-Florida series was great. I'm sorry. Every game was good. And you know what? It's so funny because I'm talking to two Islander guys and Tavares can't lose enough. And I get it. And I understand it. I'm sitting there rooting for Toronto to win games five so I could watch a sixth game because I was enjoying the series. As a Flame fan, I had guys in both camps. So I had Giordano and Brody on one side and I had Tkachuk on the other side. And I'm sitting there saying, and Bennett. And I'm like, guys, I've watched play for a lot of years. And I'm like, I don't really care, but, you know, Florida's a nice upset. But I thought it was really – I thought that was a great series. I mean, they had to play the backup goalie. The Wall played really, really well for Toronto. You know, the goal that beat him. I mean, but it was a well-played series. The Devils, just to give them their postmortem real quick, Kev, and then I'll let you jump in. I was trying to think of the example, and this is the only one I can come up with, and it might be a little far-reaching, so feel free to make fun of me, boys. But – I was watching the Devils try to skate with Carolina, reminded me of 1983 when Louisville played North Carolina State in the semifinal of the NCAA tournament and tried to run up and down the court with a team that just does it better. So Louisville comes out there with Rodney and Scooter McRae and all these and Payne and all these guys, and they're trying to run with five slam and jam, and for a half it looked fine. And then all of a sudden, Houston pulls away 94-81. The Devils tried to play Carolina's game, and Carolina was just better at it. And they were both playing fast. They were both relying on, you know, on team speed constantly. And the Devils just couldn't keep up. When Hughes wasn't on the ice, they didn't have the speed to match. And they didn't have the physicality to kind of play the way the Islanders played against them. The Islanders were able to grind them and make that series annoying for Carolina. The Devils had no answers. And it's the only reference I could come up with. It might be a little far-fetched, but when I watched it, that's what I thought of. Boys, what's your take?
Yeah, you're right. The Leafs-Panthers series was the best one in the first round, even though they only won 5. You had Panthers scored in the second half of the third period, game 1, to make it a 2-goal game. Otherwise, the other 4 were 1-goal games, 2 overtime games. And they're still, when you're watching, especially NHL playoff overtime in a deciding game, that the Leafs go out there, and when Florida scores a goal, it's not just you lose a good game like that, you lose your season like that. It's just the finality of it. I mean, I think that's why, that's what makes hockey one of the best postseason sports out there. The Devils.
It's also the fact that a goalie can basically win you a series.
Yep.
And even though you may be the 8-1, if your goalie gets hot for 5, he could totally knock out the other team with no problem. Go ahead, Kev. Sorry.
Yep. Darren, you're right. The Hurricanes just thoroughly outplayed the Devils. You mentioned the Stars, Kraken going seven games, and game seven was at least good. The other games in the series were basically not that good. You know,
yeah, competitive. Games
3 through nope. 6, 7-2, 6-3, 5-2, 6-3.
Yeah.
Vegas and the Oilers was a very similar series. You know, you had game five was close. Other than that, none of the games were close. I'll give Vegas a lot of credit. I mean, it almost sounds funny to say, but they held Edmonton to 19 goals in six games. That's three goals a game.
Yeah, it's a great feat.
That was you know, more than they could have wanted or expected from their goalie, from their defense. And kudos to Vegas for advancing and knocking off. You know, if you had to pick the Stars of the NHL, you know, you got to start with McDavid and Dreisaitl as two of the top five at the most. And they got rid of them in their round. So sets up an interesting Dallas-Vegas matchup. That'll kick off, I think, Thursday or Friday?
Yeah. I think Friday.
Yeah, I think tomorrow. Friday start.
Okay. Yeah, Thursday is the East.
The interesting thing about that series, I mean, Edmonton, if they don't find a goaltender, they're going to waste these guys.
Yep.
All right. I mean, I hate Edmonton. Couldn't be happier that they're out. Thank God. I don't need to see them anymore. Thank God. All right. But at the same time, if they have a goaltender of any sort, you know, they're a team that should be in the final. And almost every year with the offense, the power play is clicking at an obscene rate. You know, once Vegas kept themselves out of the penalty box a little bit better, it became a totally different animal. But, you know, Ottinger gives Dallas an advantage in net that Vegas hasn't faced yet here in the playoffs. That's going to be interesting to see. I mean, and Ottinger didn't even have the advantage in the other series because Grubauer was just as good. But this is a definite advantage for Ottinger over whoever, any one of the five goalies that they're able to knock out here, so to speak. So Kevin's all excited because he just got a little home run. He's all excited that Alvarez just sat there and tied up as the Mets were about to dribble away another one. So he's doing his hands up, which is cool. I'm happy for you, Kev.
Alvarez, where do you want that one? Dead middle, hanging curveball.
He basically hung a curveball in the lower middle part of the plate, and he absolutely tattooed it. And this, I didn't know if the Mets had a pulse until just now, actually.
Well, they did two innings ago when
Vientos hit. I understand. There wasn't really much. There wasn't
but Ottavino gave the way real quick.
Yeah,
we'll come back to the Mets later.
But it wasn't much of a pulse. But anyway, this is a real pulse. This is you got to love a guy. You got to love it when you're a guy the size of Alvarez. And he's not the biggest guy coming around the bases because Vogelback is just so humongous. But anyway, I digress. Just to get to the hockey, I think that Dallas is going to find their way to beat Vegas in seven. And I do think that Florida is going to find their way to get past Carolina in six. Those are my takes on these two series.
I'm going completely against you. I'm going Carolina versus Las Vegas. Kev?
I'm going Carolina and Dallas.
Oh, good. So we all split. That's good.
Well, given Darren's track record, I might just have to pick against Darren in the NHL.
You might as well. You might as well.
All right. So do we want to touch on baseball, or do we want to touch on the NFL schedule? Where do you guys want to go, Darren?
Let's knock on baseball since we just kind of alluded to it. Let Kev talk about the Mets for a minute. Because they've been fun the last couple of weeks.
Oh, they've been so much fun to watch.
So Yankees and Mets both trying to get in these races here. Teams that are playing really well right now. Tampa Bay, 32-11 before today. Baltimore surprisingly is 27-15, 12 games over. Texas at 26-16. In the National League, Atlanta, 10 games over. Milwaukee, the Dodgers somehow, still 11 games over. Arizona, 5 games over. And then teams that aren't playing so well right now, you got the White Sox at 13 games under. Cleveland, 3 games under. We kind of thought they were going to be better. St. Louis, the big surprise at 9 games under, and San Diego at 3 games under. Just a couple of things. The Mets before tonight are 3 games under. The Yankees are 6 games over. Both competing. Kev, let's talk a little bit about the Mets.
Well, you just to go back to one of your teams there, the Rays.
Yep.
And they're 5-5 or 6-5 in the last 10 games or 10 or 11 games. And I brought it up a couple weeks ago and said once you started hitting late mid-May, their schedule was picking up. And they've gone in. They had bookend series against the Yankees where they took 4 out of 7. They lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore. They beat the Mets the first game. But this is a stretch where we wanted to see if their start was for real. And right now they are playing okay. They're 6-5. Let's see what happens in the second half of the schedule. They had about a month straight where they were playing good teams and not the dregs that they were playing the first month plus 5-6 weeks of the season. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Tampa over the next 2 weeks or so. If they come out of this stretch, you know, if they go, you know, 6-5 over the next 11 also, then you say, okay, they've competed at a decent pace against good teams night after night after night. And that to me will make them for real. I still need to see more proof that they are this good.
Good point. Yeah, it's a good point.
The Mets, I feel like a broken record. What I've said last week and what I said the week before that still holds true. This team is looking dead until the ninth inning tonight. It was about time they called up Vientos. They needed to do something just to try sparking something in this lineup. But when you're sitting with putting together this lineup, and you can't quibble with the top four they're putting out there now. Now you got Nimmo. Tonight McNeil was out. But lately there's been Nimmo, Lindor, McNeil, Pete. But he's being protected tonight by Tommy Pham. Tommy Pham is protecting Pete Alonso. Why would anybody ever even throw a strike to Alonso at that point? It's ridiculous, the bottom half of this lineup. But to me, the important thing in the last couple of weeks is you are seeing Alvarez playing every day. And Alvarez has been a lot better behind the plate than we were told that he was. He's a small sample size. You know, you can nitpick, you can pick and choose what numbers you want. But one of the things was about pitch framing. And he's near the top of the league in pitch framing. I know Tampa stole about 6 or 7 bases tonight now. None of them were Alvarez. I mean, the pitchers have just been awful holding runners line tonight. Beatty playing third base has been a lot better than I think we heard. He's making every routine play. Not making superstar plays, but he's making every routine play. These guys, they need to ride through these guys having some of their slumps and some of their little peaks and valleys here. But Buck's doing the right thing, playing them every day. I want to see Vientos out there close to every day as well. They're going to have to juggle the lineup here. They're going to have to juggle some of the guys. I don't need to see any more of Tommy Pham. I don't need to see much more of Mark Hanna. These are fourth outfielders. They do not be the heart of the lineup. Starling Marte, you expect to bounce back eventually. The back of the baseball card says he's a hell of a lot better than he's playing right now. Lindor needs to bounce back. But as much as I want to harp on the offense, the pitching staff has just been dreadful. Unfortunately, Verlander came out against Tampa Bay and put up a bad start. Scherzer threw a good start his last time out. Let's see what happens this weekend. Let's see if he can put together back-to-back starts. Because of the short starts, the bullpen's been exposed. The middle relief is a bunch of journeymen. You know, they're the type that you throw against the wall. I mean, you want to look at a typical journeyman. They're a 4 ERA, and it feels like every Met reliever comes in there with that track record. Robertson's been great. Vino's been solid. Drew Smith has been solid. It's nice to have Raley back, to have a lefty in the bullpen who you can rely on. But that middle relief just leaves a lot to be desired there. They need something to spark this team to make a run. What you count to 9 is when you look at what, you know, Philly did last year. They got off to the bad start. Washington a couple of years ago were below 500 around the end of May, and they made the run to the World Series, won the World Series. So let's see if the Mets can do this year.
Okay.
Kev, that's my take on the Mets.
Kev, any concerns about Buck?
Right now, no. Okay. I think it's more right now. You look at this Mets team, and I don't think you can blame Buck. I think it's Brandon Nimmo is playing at or maybe even a little bit above what you might expect. Pete's got the home runs and RBIs. The average is a bit lower. There's not one other guy who is approaching anywhere near the back of his baseball card playing this year. Marte's low. Lindor's at 230. Canada's been lower. Vogelbach's got no power this year. He's drawing a ton of walks. Big deal. He's fat. He can't run. They're not getting any production anywhere. And I don't know if that's manager or if that's on the players. I think it's on the players to write themselves first.
No, I get it. I was just curious about your take as a Mets fan on that.
I'll quibble with some of his lineup decisions, but you know, in-game managerial, making moves in games, you know, you're always going to disagree with the manager here and there. But I think overall, I'm not upset with Buck yet.
My most disconcerting thing about the Mets has been they've actually gone up against one of the weakest schedules in baseball far, yeah. And they've done nothing with it. It's only going to get harder, and that's the only concern. But I agree. I mean, Marte's starting to show signs a little bit, right? Lindor has to start showing signs. If they don't get Marte, Lindor, and McNeil going along with Nimmo and Alonso, they're not going anywhere. Verlander, he gave up a couple of dingers last night. I think he'll be okay. You know, Scherzer bounced back a little bit last start. Let's see what happens. I'm going to kill Cashman in about 3 seconds, but, you know, you got to kill Epler a little bit as well because he did not put this team together with that kind of payroll the way it should have been put together, in my take. G?
And the Mets have no pitching at AAA.
Nope.
Listen, for me with the Mets, I got to give Buck the benefit of the doubt. They've dealt with a lot of injuries specifically to the pitching. Specifically to Scherzer and Verlander. And, you know, until those two are back together pitching on a daily bit, you know, on a weekly basis, I think it's really difficult to start, you know, telling me that this is Buck's fault at the moment. But all right, let's move to the Yankees. Darren, I will let you start this off.
Listen, I'm going to start off with the fact that when Judge is in this lineup, this team is playing better. Volpe looks like he's kind of becoming a little bit of a regular kind of guy out there. Bader's a difference maker in the lineup and a grit guy out in the field. There's things you like about it. Cole, again, you know, tonight they're in a 0-0 game right now, but Cole came out and pitched well again. His only bad start was that Rays series, which was the difference between us going 4-3 against them and 3-4 against them, was blowing a 6-run lead. But we went toe-to-toe with them. We're beating the crap first two games out of Toronto, a team that beat up Atlanta last weekend. So, you know, there are things that you see you like. But when I sit there and I look at this team and I look at this bullpen that I have to watch and endure every night, and I have to watch Clark Schmidt as my going into the season as my 7, I have problems. I have problems with Brian Cashman. There's no quality in this pen at all. He did a horrible job. I mean, listen, next year is going to be like the Shohei – Ohtani sweepstakes. The Dodgers payroll goes down to $109 million. You know, all this stuff's happening. Every team is set up for that, and I get it. But the fact of the matter is that the Yankees don't have a small payroll. The Mets certainly don't have a small payroll. And the fact that this is the best that they can put together as quality arms drives me nuts. Cashman's pass since 2009 is unreal. It's just not Yankee-like, and it's unacceptable. Again, though, you know, listen, the team has become fun to watch again with Judge in the lineup. The home run off the I'll let you go. I have a couple other little stats later, but go ahead, G, make your point.
So, no, I want to touch on the same thing you're saying, and that is, you know, Judge, Bader, Rizzo, and then after that, it's a lot of guys here who you don't know if you want here for another couple of years. You like what you see in some.
I'll keep Volpe. I'll keep Volpe too.
Well, but Darren, he's hitting 212. I mean, if he's
it's okay, I'll keep Volpe.
Well, but here's my only issue with Volpe. Okay, and that is if Peraza had come up here and hit well for the 8 days he was up here, Volpe may not be on his team at the moment.
I can't see that being the case.
Well, I don't know, because if Peraza would have come up here and just beat the crap out of the ball for six straight games that he played, I don't know if he would have stayed, Volpe. And I like the kid, but I just don't know if he would have stayed, right? But, I mean, other than that group, you have a lot of guys here, and the Yankees are almost locked into a lot of these players. So either they're going to start cutting bait at some point, and listen, it gets even worse when Donaldson comes back. You know, at some point, Hicks is going to come off the DL again or whatever the hell he is in DL purgatory, whatever the hell he is. I mean, the bullpen, it's a lot of young guys, right? But are they any good is another question altogether. And the starting pitching is just injury after injury after injury. You know, we haven't seen anything out of Rodon. You know, Severino, who the hell knows? Herman's getting suspended. You know, it's one thing after another with this team. And I agree with you. I said this last week. I thought it was time for Cashman to go. And I'm starting to really get the feeling that that's the point. Go ahead, Darren.
Oh, just a couple of quick points about the Yankees and the Blue Jays series. Obviously, we had an issue with apparently pitch tipping, and then the Blue Jays got all pissed off that Judge was looking in for signs. Listen, the kid was tipping his pitches. He came out and admitted it today. Judge hit one about 475 feet. You know, the way it is, broke the maple leaf. And I just thought there were two interesting things that happened this week. So they broke the maple leaf, Yankees versus Blue Jays. Remember Yankees versus Blue Jays when Winfield killed the bird and had to go to jail for questioning for a little bit. Just a little thing with that. Today, Zach Gallen on Arizona killed the bird with a curveball in Arizona, just like Randy Johnson once killed the bird in Arizona throwing a fastball. I just thought that the irony of the Yankees versus Blue Jays with these type of things, with the maple leaf and the bird getting killed and two Arizona pitchers killing birds on pitches, I thought were both quite interesting. Just a thought on that. But I sit here and I look at this Yankee team, and Sevy looks like he's coming back, G. He threw 58 pitches last night. So even if he comes back, what are we going to get, 70 pitches out of him in 3 to 4 innings? But hopefully they stretch him out. You need him to be the guy. As Kev can tell you right now, just watching the Mets, the Yankee bullpen is very similar. Mets come back with a heroic ninth inning, and they give up 2 runs in the top of the 10th. Hopefully they can come back and score 3 here in the bottom and make you not even think about it. But you're just very nervous about these bullpens coming in. And that was Robertson. That wasn't even – you know, crap. That was Robertson. The Yankees sitting there closing games with Wandy Peralta. I don't even trust that he could throw strikes. He's closing games out. I'm sitting there with King closing games out. He's hittable. I'm sorry. You know, Marinaccio, who has a good start here and a good performance here and there, and then he implodes. Hamilton, who was okay, got hurt last night. It's like the Yankee bullpen. There was like no thought. A few years ago, you're sitting there with 3 or 4 closers that you can sit there and intertwine. And, oh, Britton will pitch the 8th with Chapman the 9th. He actually went out there actually thinking that Clay Holmes was good. That's how bad he is, that he thought Clay Holmes was the answer. He didn't even try to come up with somebody else. He didn't even have a plan B. He went with Clay Holmes, who had a good first half last year and an awful second half, saying that's our guy. Enough of Brian Cashman. Enough. I mean, Billy Epler, I'm going to give a pass to, because, you know, he spent a lot of money and all this stuff. But you know what? He hasn't been here for 15 years of futility, or 14, or whatever we want to say. Cashman has been. It's enough. The Yankees aren't supposed to go a decade without winning a series or getting to a series. Not supposed to happen. I know that sounds very pompous and arrogant, but this is the New York Yankees. It's unacceptable. Kev?
Yeah, with the... I mean, like you said, the comparison, at least when, you know, Epler in the preseason or off season is sitting there looking at Diaz as your closer, he brings in Robertson. He's got Ottavino and Smith, who all of a sudden, when they're back to the 7th inning, all of a sudden now you've got the back end of the bullpen that you can rely on somebody doing the job night after night.
I'm just saying, I have no faith in Ottavino. You might like him. I don't. I watched the Yankees and fall apart down the stretch 2 years in a row where they couldn't even trust him in a playoff game.
Ottavino pitched very well for the Mets last year. And to me, if he's coming in the seventh inning in the right spot in the lineup against a bunch of righties, I'm wonderful with him.
I'm not. I just think he doesn't throw strikes in big spots, and I think he walks you around the bases. If you lay off that sweeping slider, that never – it's like watching John Franco pitch. I don't know how you do it.
And it's funny. He's only walked four so far this year.
I know. I don't know how to swing. The pitches are never strikes. It's like watching John Franco.
Yep.
All right. But any other closing baseball thoughts before we move on, guys?
No, I think I made my point.
All right.
I think I made his.
Yeah.
The Yankees lost, by the way, 3-0. They gave up a 3-run homer in the 10th.
Okay.
Well, Mets one are trying interesting, to make a rally. Let's see what happens.
One interesting injury note was Dustin May going out. Elbow issue. They're saying the UCL is still intact. That's not the issue. But he's coming back from Tommy John surgery. And he's already out with elbow injuries, you know, less than 2 months into the season. I don't like the Dodgers, but, you know, May looks like he's got some stuff. May looks like he's a fun guy to watch pitch. You hate to see this type of injuries happen to, you know, guys that you think are going to be the fun guys to watch.
No, I agree. I find nothing about the Dodgers fun, but May has good stuff, and you hate to see good pitchers go down. It just weakens the game. By the way, Peralta gave up the 3-run homer that cost the Yankees the game. Let me just point that out.
There you go.
Back to you, Jake.
All right. Let's touch on a little PGA, and then we'll come back to the other couple of topics. So the 105th PGA Championship starts tomorrow at Oak Hill Country Club. Kev, any thoughts on the golf?
Well, you're going into this, and you're thinking that you don't want to necessarily pick favorites, but my goodness, with the way Scheffler and Rahm are playing, you'd be hard-pressed not to pick one of those guys to really be there on late Sunday. I think it's going to be interesting seeing a guy like Rory. He's had a couple weeks off here. Is he refocused? If they're playing up in Oak Hill, up in Rochester, the weather looks like it could be a little iffy, maybe some rain. I think Pete just won the game for the Mets. His 3-run home run wins the game.
And there you go. You got your 3 runs back.
You know, Rory's length can make up for any wet grounds. So you always got to give him a chance here. Justin Thomas is defending champ. His odds are about plus 2,800. That'd be an interesting one to look at. Guy like Brooks Koepka, you know, he's won 2 PGAs. Looks like he's healthy. Last month he finished second to the Masters. Maybe this year he remembers, or this month he remembers that the PGA is 72 holes, not 54 holes, as a joke went for the Masters. he's plus 1,800. That's an interesting pick there. Some of the other guys that you would look at, you know, Morikawa's plus 3,000. Fitzpatrick, you know, he won the RBC. He played a pretty good round at the Masters. He's at plus 3,500. You've got guys like Spieth and Homa at plus 4,000. You know, I think this is a wide open PGA.
I agree. I completely agree with you.
I actually like the way Shoffley's been playing the last couple of rounds as well. I think Xander's in play in this tournament. I think you mentioned him a little later, but I like Koepka. A guy that's been playing a little bit well off of the as a long shot that I'm going to look at is Tigala, who I think has played pretty well so far this year. You know, listen, very hard to argue. I mean, Scheffler did not win the tournament he was favored to win last week. A little surprising, actually. Let Jason Day take it. But
he was tied going in the back nine, and then the flat stick let him down last week.
I mean, so Scheffler has not been Scheffler this year. I don't mean it in a bad way. I think he's been competitive, but just not able to hit putts in big spots. So I'm a little bit more leaning against him. I think Shoffley's going to win this tournament this year. That's going to be my pick.
Shoffley's currently at 16-1.
He's the guy I'm going to pick.
Koepka, you also mentioned, is 18-1.
I like both of them. I do. I think Koepka got hurt with the weather delays in the last tournament. I think it kind of took him out of a groove. I know he only played the 54. I get the whole thing. But I think he was hitting the ball so well, I think he got a little bit screwed up with the weather delays.
And I think Tony Finau's got two wins this year. He's at 20-1. He's another guy to watch for. You know, Finau and Shoffley are two guys that you're just waiting for them to break through and win their first major.
Yeah, I'm picking Xander in this one. I think Justin Thomas will be competitive. I think Spieth will be competitive. I think we have a chance of having a really great – I mean, every time the superstars are in there, you always hope for it. I think we have a really chance of having a really great leaderboard on Sunday.
Okay, and let me give you a couple of my picks. So,
yep,
John Rahm is at 7-1 to win this thing. But I did this the last time. I'm going to do the same thing again. To finish in the top 10, and I like these bets because you can pick multiple guys and you may hit on two or three of them. I got three guys I like in the top 10. Jason Day at plus 260. Jason Spieth at plus 330. And Ricky Fowler at plus 450. Those are three guys I like to finish in the top 10. And maybe you hit two of them and you cash in at two of the three bets at least.
Jason, it would be nice to get Ricky back into it. And Ricky has been like persona non grata for a couple of years now. I love him as a player. I hope you're right.
And one of my – I like Jason Day in this. To win it all, Jason Day is at 28-1, so I kind of like that.
All right. 2 weeks in a row. Gino's on that horse. I like it.
All right. Any other PGA talk before we move on, guys?
I'm good.
All right. Let's touch on the NFL schedule. Came out about a week and a half ago. Do you want me to give you a couple of pieces of information? So, easiest schedule on the board, according to whatever rankings there are, the Saints, the Falcons, the Panthers, the Colts, the Bears, the five hardest schedules were the Dolphins, the Raiders, the Chiefs, the Bills, the Pats. According from easiest to hard, the Giants were the 19th easiest. The Jets were the 25th, so they're in the top seven or eight hardest schedules. Based on the schedule coming out, the Giants were projected to win 8.4 games, the Jets at 9.7. I got a couple of other interesting points, but Darren, you want to hit me with a couple of schedule pieces of information you like?
Just before I get to the schedule, just pay Quinn and Williams already. I don't really want to sit here and watch this stupidity anymore. He's your best player. Pay him. And now I'll get to my thing. The NBA, the NFL has gotten a little crazy, right? So now this year's broadcast partners include NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, ESPN, Nickelodeon, Amazon, NFL Network, and Peacock. Enough. Now, apparently, every year they're going to do this Black Friday game. The Jets have petitioned to have it. Well, I don't know. I don't like it. How does Detroit get chosen as the opening game for Kansas City? I know they're a nice upstart team. I'm not trying to say they're bad. But now you're going to put the Chiefs against – and the Lions could win this game. Who the hell knows? But that's not a sexy matchup to kick off the season. I'm sorry. Kansas City-Detroit is not what everybody's – can't wait for the NFL to kick off. The Jets, I thought that they got a pretty interesting schedule overall. They had six prime games if you include the Black Friday. Four of them are at home. You know, they get both Kansas City and Philly at home, so they play the two defending champs, so to speak. So one of them in a primetime game. I think their road playoff games were at Cleveland, and I'm trying to remember what the other one was. Raiders. They played the Raiders on the road. They get the Chargers at home. They get the Chiefs at home. So they have it all right. The Giants play four of their first 11 at home and seven on the road. The schedule maker didn't do a lot of favors. They might call the schedule easy, but you start with 7 of 11 on the road. They also get a ton of primetime games, including Philly on Christmas Day, if you want to count that. Overall, you know, The Jets get the Monday night kickoff with the Bills and against the Bills at home. Giants play Sunday night with the same thing with the home game against the Cowboys. NFL has three Monday night doubleheaders, but they're staggering the starts, so they're not doing 7-10, which I kind of like. You have 7-15 and 8-15s in weeks 2-3. Week 14 says they're both 8-15 starts. I don't know if that's a typo on the NFL Network or not, but nonetheless, a little bit interesting there. The Thanksgiving three games that we all get to watch: Green Bay, Detroit, Washington, Dallas, San Francisco, Seattle. You know, overall, the scheduling is exciting. I just think that there's too many. There's a playoff game on Peacock. There's, enough. I don't know. I think they're making it too complicated to try to catch all these games and please all these masters. Kev, thoughts?
Yeah, the Black Friday game streaming on Amazon Prime.
Exactly.
The Sunday morning Yahoo streaming games. It's just too much, like you said. Look at the schedule. One of the nice things was, you know, looking at the Jets schedule, for a change, they do not play a team coming off a bye week.
It was nice.
So they are one of the, when you look at the number of days of rest compared to the other team, they were actually on the plus side this year. It feels like every year they were on the minus side. Felt like they always played a tough team off a bye. And it's going to be different this year, not just punching in 16 Sundays at one for a Jet game.
No, I'm going to be up late. I don't like it.
Going to be a lot of quite a few late nights for us Jet fans. I can't wait for the season to start. I'm ready.
Well, listen, we have a quarterback for the first time in our lifetime. It's pretty exciting.
Yep.
I'll give you a couple of schedule pieces here. One is the Raiders, who have the, according to the rankings, they have the fourth hardest schedule. They play six games against teams coming off their Monday night football games.
Wow.
Okay.
All right. And then the other thing that I like to look at sometimes is what they call a negated bye week. So it's, you know, when you have a bye week, theoretically, you're going to get extra rest to prep for your team, to prep for your next opponent. But this year, there are 11 teams that have their bye week negated. It doesn't hurt the team, but it doesn't give them any extra rest. And the Vikings are going to have their bye week negated for a third straight year. So it just, there's a lot of scheduling quirks. I think all these extra networks are really throwing a big loop into this. How do we get everybody playing enough games and where, and, you know, Thursday nights and Monday nights. Darren may have a point. I think the NFL, I know what they're trying to do, but at the same point, they really are all over the map now. I mean, this is a lot of craziness. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, like we said, again, it's going to be prime time for us in the Jets. I think there's four teams that don't get a prime time game this year, which has been something that they've tried to avoid in giving every team a shot, like the Jets over the course of the years. So they're trying to make sure that, the stupid Jacksonville game or the stupid Cleveland game or whatever they do, you know, usual crap that they do. I like full schedules on Sundays. I know the way when Christmas falls a certain time of year and New Year's, you know, you're going to have a little bit of a disparity with it. But I don't know. I just think that it's too scattered. For an adult that has a family, it's very hard to sit there and commit 4 days to the NFL. It just is. I can't always do it. And it's, so there's going to be games that I would like to see that I'm not going to be able to get to see. And that does disappoint me a little bit.
Okay. Anything else on the schedule, guys?
If that works for you boys.
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, so the Preakness for me real quick. You guys got me? Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, I'm sorry. All right, so we have an 8-horse field. For the first time since 1969, only one horse coming from the Derby is running in the Preakness. Thank God it's the winner, Mays, who goes off as the 8-5 morning line favorite right now. Figure by the time that race runs, it's going to be 6-5, maybe even money. Could even go down to 4-5. The other horses in this race, nobody's really that impressive. I guess the only horse that you would call a threat would be First Mission. Three races lifetime. The last two went two turns. Won the Lexington, which was not a big race. It was a small grade three. He's a good stalker horse. The problem in this race is there's no speed. The only chance of a horse with speed is Coffee with Chris, who may not be able to make the distance. So now we don't know what you're going to get. Blazing Sevens was a horse that could have run in the Derby. He was actually an also eligible that turned down the Derby that allowed another horse to get in. So Blazing Sevens could have run the Derby, but saved it for this one. And they get Chad Brown, who's won the race twice, and Erod Ortiz, who's a hell of a jockey. Third at the Bluegrass, so not a great race. Red Root 1, I've watched run a few times. Great closer, not a lot of pace. Makes it hard to be a great closer if there's not a lot of pace. National Treasures, 4-1 in the morning line. A well-beaten fourth in the Santa Anita, not a factor. Chase the Chaos, doesn't belong in this race. Sorry, doesn't belong in this race. Best buyer number is like 83. Doesn't belong in this race.
But he won the El Camino Real Derby at Golden Gate to get automatic entry into this race.
He finished eighth in that race. He didn't win it.
He finished eighth in the California Derby.
Oh, the Cal Derby. Yeah, I'm sorry. Which one are you talking about?
The El Camino Real Derby.
Oh, I'm sorry. He finished eighth in the Cal Derby at Golden Gate. I'm sorry. My bad. Perform. I love Shug McGahee, but this horse doesn't belong in this race.
It took him six tries to break a maiden.
He won the Tessio, which was a very bad race, to be honest with you. So this is the eight horses that are in the field. If Mage doesn't win it, it'll be a real major upset. The only horse you can really give credence to is First Mission to have a chance because he's looked good in his last couple. If Coffee with Chris can get the distance and control the pace, you never know. And if there is a pace, Red Root 1 could be a horse that comes off the pace. Kev, any thoughts?
I was looking, and the fact that you're going with seven fresh horses to go against Mage, I'm looking at one of the other ones, and I kind of like Blazing Sevens. I know he hasn't run run great. You know, like you said, third in the Bluegrass behind Tappet Trice. He finished second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He finished second in the Fountain of Youth, both times beaten by Forte, who was going to be the Derby favorite. So you feel like he's got the, and with Brown as a trainer, like you said, he's won two of the last seven Preaknesses. So you feel like the connections are there. I think he's got a shot at being in the money and definitely being part of the exotics. And National Treasure, it's going to be interesting. This is Baffert's first time back in a Triple Crown race in 2 years. This horse was a 500K yearling purchase.
No, absolutely.
So the pedigree is there. He only had one win in five races. You know, like you said, third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, fourth in the Santa Anita. Unless Baffert can work some of his magic. You know, the two obvious ones, like you said, are the two favorites right now, Mage and First Mission. I'm going to go on the limb. I'm going to go for the upset. I'm going to take Blazing Sevens on top.
Yeah, I tried to like Blazing Sevens. He's not run any really great races, my only big concern.
But nobody has, except for Mage.
No, I mean, really. Mage, I mean, the two favorites have.
And of course, First Mission, yeah.
Yeah, the two favorites have. It's, you know, Red Root 1 I've watched run, and he can close, but he's going to need pace to do it.
There's no pace.
There's no pace unless, you know.
Unless somebody goes out with
Coffee with Chris is the only one that has a shot. That's the only one that's got a shot. So it's kind of a wide open race. Gee, any pick here on the Freak Mistakes?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, exactly what you guys talked about is the way it's looking right now. You know, the one thing I came up with is maybe a trifecta where you put National Treasure and First Mission 1-2 and put Mage 3. But you know, other than that, I just don't see a lot of other horses getting involved in this trifecta here. You know, you guys talked about a couple of them, but I just don't see it. My best bet would probably be a trifecta box with the three of them. And instead of doing a low number, do a high number. Those are the three horses I think that are going to finish in some order, 1, 2, 3. So maybe it's a $20 trifecta box with National Treasure, Mage, and First Mission, and maybe you hit something here. But other than that, that's all I see at the moment.
The problem is that you really can throw out, I think, the four horses can be thrown out pretty easily.
Yeah.
And that only leaves you with the four other horses to bet on, and I think that's where all the money's going anywhere. It's not going to be a big money-making Preakness. Unless you happen to throw a couple of dollars on a long shot and they miraculously win.
It has happened in the past, but usually the Preakness is not the race for it. What is going to happen, though, is if Mage does win this race, we should be set up for quite the Derby with a couple of rested horses to go up against Mage. It'll be an exciting Derby if Mage wins this race. I just think that Forte will run in it. I'd be surprised, unless he's sick, I'd be surprised if he doesn't run in it. Angel of Empire will be back. I think that we'll see some horses that can really run.